From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
But something happened there when I was lying in the bed, because, you know, they give you opiates and then you don't sleep for days. And then I was like, I want to be a boss. And I remember my ceiling just be like, I'm going to live and I'm going to be a boss. And then it happened.
Soon after Latinx playwright Tanya Saracho got the green light to make a pilot for her first TV series, she contracted a dangerous spinal infection. But Saracho rallied, and her spicy new show, Vida, has just premiered on the Starz channel. A former Chicago-based playwright, Saracho tells us about her horrible first experiences as a TV writer and how she ended up running the first all-Latinx writer's room in cable. But first on the news banter, Redstone versus Moonves. It is on. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Melany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, wow, as we speak, there has just been fireworks around this strained relationship between Leslie Moonves, the CEO and chairman of CBS, and Shari Redstone, daughter of Sumner Redstone. The Redstone family, you know, controls both Viacom and CBS. Shari Redstone has very much wanted to merge Viacom with CBS. Viacom is troubled. It's got a lot of cable channels that are challenged. We've talked about this before, MTV, Comedy Central, Nickelodeon. In this environment of cord cutting, it's getting harder and harder. She desperately feels that they need scale, wants Les Moonves to, at least for now, run a combined company. But she wants her handpicked CEO, Bob Bakish, to have a role, and Leslie Moonves was not interested in that. And then CBS shocked everybody, including Shari Redstone, by going to court and saying, hey, you know what, we want to issue some more stock and dilute Shari Redstone's interest in this company so that we are not controlled by her anymore, which is an absolutely extraordinary and audacious thing to do, so much so they went to court looking for a restraining order to prevent her from interfering with a board meeting in which they were going to do this thing and dilute her interest. And they didn't want her to interfere with that board meeting. And Shari Redstone, meanwhile, maneuvered so they can't pass that in this board meeting. She changed the rules of voting because she has that kind of control and power. But now they won't have enough votes. They'll make a symbolic vote. But they went to court, CBS, to try to just get this thing settled so that they could issue these shares and get rid of Shari Redstone's control. And the judge at this point was not willing to go there.
No, and it's setting up this interesting dynamic because Shari Redstone has these two companies, CBS and Viacom, wants to merge them. One of them is openly resisting, and she has to balance this overall goal she has of creating scale with her business with the obligation she has to the CBS shareholders. And that's what the judge essentially was saying, is that, yes, she is the controlling shareholder. She can do what she wants. She owns the companies. But she can't create a scenario where she's punishing the shareholders of one of her companies in order to prop up the other.
Yeah, it's like she has two children, one of whom seems pretty healthy. The other one is kind of sickly, and she has an equal obligation to both children. So if she's going to help the sickly one, Viacom, at the expense of the healthy one, CBS, the judge made it very clear that the CBS shareholders could actually drag her back to court and sue her and cause her a lot of problems. So now the question is, what next? You know, CBS will have a symbolic vote where everybody on the board but Shari and one of her chosen members of that board will vote to dilute Shari's interest. That will fail. CBS will then say, well, okay, we still have a valid claim if she does anything to harm us. And in that situation, I am not sure what Shari Redstone does because she's somewhat in a corner. She has to watch her next step. She has very high-priced lawyers. But, you know, CBS is lying in wait if she makes a move that damages or arguably damages them. But the bigger picture, Matt, of course, is what about Leslie Moonves, who has been one of the most respected executives. He presented his fall season at the Upfronts in New York this past week and received a prolonged standing ovation from the advertisers because he has been so successful. And everybody knows that he is in this war, life-or-death battle with Shari Redstone.
Yeah, and I don't see an outcome here where he stays with CBS if Shari is allowed to merge these companies. You know, he's 68 years old. He has been able to write his own ticket for all of these years. He had a benefactor in Sumner Redstone that allowed him to operate his business. And I just don't see him sticking around if he loses this fight.
Well, when you do something like that to an owner, you know, the chances are you will not survive, and he will then go out in a blaze of glory, theoretically, say, I left at the top of my game, I fought for my company, and then he'll drop the mic and he'll be very rich. I don't think that's an outcome. You know, some people feel like, oh, well, he'll be very rich. But the guys like these animals, mostly guys who run these places, being very rich is not the game. The game is having a seat at that table where very few people sit at these giant media companies.
But one thing to keep in mind here is that this is not new. Leslie Moonves has worked for CBS and has not owned this company. He is not the owner. And he has had a lot of freedom, but at the end of the day, the Redstone family controls these companies. So for him to essentially be stomping his feet and saying, you know, you are hurting this company, everybody has known for years and years and years that this is a family operation that's even built into the stock. They call it the Redstone discount because the stocks of Viacom and CBS are priced in such a way that recognizes that it's under family control, and they may do things that are not necessarily in the best interest of maximizing the stock. So it's hard for him to say, do what I want and not what the owner wants.
Let me just say he's the best situated of any executive in one of these companies probably to say that, but it is hard for him to say. However, you know, she is looking at a situation where I think Wall Street is looking askance at what she's doing, and I think it's a very risky play. I mean, CBS stock already got punished when the court wouldn't allow CBS to go ahead and essentially de facto get rid of her influence. So you see how Wall Street is voting, and that's something to bear in mind. If that continues, as I said, she could have legal liability.
And then there's obviously the creative community, which is 100% aligned behind Moonves. You got to expect that.
For the most part, absolutely. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. The new Starz series Vida follows two sisters, Emma and Lynn Hernandez, who come home to LA's Boyle Heights neighborhood after the death of their mother. They soon learn that the late Vidalia had some big secrets, including the fact that she had been married for the past 2 years to a woman. Younger sister Lynn, played by Melissa Barrera, takes this news in stride, while chilly older sister Emma, played by Michelle Prada, is furious, partially because their mother's relationship affects their inheritance.
Okay, listen to this. Vidalia has left us the building. But we have to split it three ways.
Three ways?
Mm-hmm.
With the wife?
Yep.
I mean, I guess that makes sense.
Over my dead body.
Vida was created by our guest today, Tanya Saracho, a playwright who ran a Latinx theater group in Chicago before moving to LA 5 years ago.
You're a showrunner. You're a first-time showrunner.
First time, yeah.
Do you read the reviews?
Yeah, I do. I used to do that for theater stuff, and they're like, don't read your reviews. And my reviews in theater were mixed. There was always some kind of racial thing that they would say, like mamacita.
You know? Somebody said that?
Yep.
That is so wrong.
Or... like, this play is basically like Sexo in the Windy Ciudad, Sex in the City, but Sex in the Windy
City.
Ciudad. Okay. And it's like, why do they have to, like, it's kind of because you're racializing it,
right?
Know?
Why are you comparing it to
so
a thing
like,
that's
I've always been ready for reviews like that, and it hasn't been like that for this. And I'm like, just still waiting for them to come back.
I think people, from what I've read, they're just really excited that Starz is trying to do something like this.
And they are doing it, they're putting all their heft behind it, you know? When we had the writer's room production, like, it's always been like, yes, yes. Like, they were ready to say yes for this first season, and I hope I don't get used to it, because it was not, I'm not going to say it's easy, because any show is not easy, you know, but like.
That part was easy.
Yeah. I wanted all Latinx writers. Yes, of course. I wanted all female department heads. Yes, of course. Like, it's been amazing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, setting aside the merits of your show, what is that about, do you think?
Well, I don't know if this is real, but from my perspective, Marta Fernandez is my covering executive.
She's the exec, right.
So I have someone in the castle. You know, I don't have to storm it. I don't have to sneak into it. I don't have to, like, you know, beg to be there. She's, like, inviting me in and protecting me at every part. We've become like sisters now. I really love her. And I know it sounds like Pollyanna and cheesy, but I've never experienced anything like that.
I mean, the one thing, looking at it through the cold eye of a business person who might ask a question, it's, of course, everybody's desperately trying to reach a
Latinx. Oh, yeah. They had six, when I got there, I was one of six projects, Latinx-themed or Latinx gaze.
You're gonna have to help me with terminology.
Latinx is like Latino, but we're taking away gender.
Right.
It's gender inclusive.
So it means
it's
everybody.
Not patriarchal. Yes.
Because I wasn't sure if there was a sexuality element to it.
Well, it's a to taking away gender. So a non-binary Latinx person, you can say this too.
But going back to the Latin.
Latinx. So yeah.
Everybody wants that audience. That audience loves entertainment.
Oh, we consume, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Film and TV.
You know, a lot of things that have been engineered to be like specifically for that audience didn't really work. And there was a time I wrote a story, this was years ago, and people were saying, people in that community, in the Latinx community, they don't want something formulated for them. You know, they want to be part of whatever the mainstream culture is into, and that's why it's not working. That was the takeaway when I reported that story a long time ago.
I think it's been different waves of things, right? Like, because we haven't been seen at each decade. Mm-hmm. Like, we get a little try. We got La Bamba. We got seen as Chicanos, and then what happened, right? Or we're seen through a point of view that is not ours. We're like, we're Scarface. What? And then, you know.
Thank you, but
no. But then, like, every decade, there are some big attempts. I don't have the answer. I just know that I think sometimes we try to swallow up the whole world or all of culture and be like, okay, this is the immigrant narrative. And you can't do that because we're 27 countries that make up the Latin diaspora. How are you going to do that? There's a whole thing. So I just leaned into the specificity of this world, this slang, this style of Spanglish. And it's not the same as Cuban Spanglish from Miami or New Yorker Spanglish from Brooklyn or Bronx. So, like, I feel like maybe that's the way in, and also telling the second generational American story, because it's an American story that I'm telling.
So if you were trying to do that, reach out and get that audience, but you're picking a show that has a lot of characters who are either gay or you talked about...
Oh, Top Femme.
Top Femme with a person that was non-binary?
Yeah, they were having sex with a non-binary person.
Yes, okay. Yeah. But what I'm wondering is, what I'm trying to get to is... And yet they go forward, even though I would think in the whole, can I still say Latino?
Yeah, say whatever you want. Yeah.
Latino community, in the whole Latino community, you know, I don't know that that is so accepted, right? That's a big deal.
Well, I'm queer and I'm Latinx and I'm steeped in that. So, you know, I just sort of wrote from my perspective. And then my writer's room is mostly queer and Latina, and so we wrote it for us.
This is maybe more a question for stars,
sure,
honestly.
Yeah.
Like, why do you choose this if you want to broaden your to a huge number of that audience? I just think it shows that they must have really liked it, or
yeah, because, like, you know, the assignment was when they brought me in, and I thought I was interviewing for a gig, like a writing gig, like, because I had been here 3 years and I had just left How to Get Away with Murder. And you know, she presented me with this, like, yeah, this show, have you heard of gentrification? Oh, I haven't heard of that term. Gentrification,
right,
being, you know.
Being gentrification.
Of, you know, gentrification of Latinx space by upwardly mobile Latinx, you know. Oh my God, that's fascinating. Great. We want a show that is about Latina millennials in East LA, about gentrification, chipsters. Can you do it?
Chipsters being
Chicano hipsters.
Chicano hipsters, okay.
And I was like, I can do it.
They literally asked you for that.
It was that
specific.
But also broad, because...
Right. Because within that world, it can be whatever it is.
And
right?
It is. Right. You know, they didn't say queer. You know, they didn't say there's a non-binary sex scene. But everything I would turn in, they were like, yes, and... Yes, and
you're like, damn,
they kept
going
saying,
on?
Well, no, they were like, we're Prime Cable, so bring us Prime Cable. Okay. I'm a watcher of Stars. I'm obsessed with Outlander, which is not like the show, but it is, because it's like complicated women at the center.
Right.
So this is a star show.
Right.
You know?
So let's roll back. You were a playwright.
Yeah.
And you were born in Mexico, but grew up in the in Texas, basically.
I grew up in my childhood in Mexico, and then around 12, 13, I went to Texas. And it was like Mexico, but light and clean, you know, but it was like same air, same temperature from the town 10 minutes over that we used to live in. It was so porous too in the 90s. You know, you could go in and out, forget your passport and just be.
Oh, gosh, those days are unfortunately.
No, it's so different now than when we grew up.
Yeah, really different.
Yes.
So you decide to move to Chicago, I think because it's a vibrant theater scene, right?
Yes.
Very vibrant.
I was a Boston University, and it was that last year when everyone's deciding we're all going to New York, right? And I had been to New York in the weekends to visit friends, and they lived in shoeboxes and had to have three jobs, and they walked, and there was no supermarkets, and I like to eat, as you can tell. And I'm like, wait a minute, I don't want to be walking around all the time not eating and having three jobs and not doing theater, because it took people a while to get. And I was like, I wanted to start a theater company too. Chicago, you know, Steppenwolf, right. Looking Glass. That's where the
amazing
theater. So, and it yeah. worked. You know, I started a company and of all Latinas, which, see, there's a theme here, you know.
I did notice yeah. the theme. Yeah.
Yeah. And some people, you know, some Latinx writers are like, I don't want to be pigeonholed. I like being identified as a Latina writer. I'm proud of it. I think I will never get tired of telling our stories. And there are so many stories. So, like, I don't feel pigeonholed yet, you know.
So you write plays and then you decide, I think an agent saw one of your plays.
Yeah, I was
right?
in New York doing a play at a like 49-seat theater or something. I thought I was like, I've arrived. It was my first play in New York. And I guess he got a hold of Mala Yerba, which is this play that had been making the rounds. Everybody had read it, but nobody would be like, we'll produce it, you know? But it opened a lot of doors in TV. It's like...
It was your spec script that you didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know it because it was a play. And then he like... found me and he was like, you can write for TV. And I was like, that's not a thing that I've ever thought about, you know?
Did you go like you?
No, I just never, nobody had heard of UTA, UTA, which I thought was called UTA,
UTA.
Forever, because that's what it says on the email.
Not UTA. Ka, or no, like, I can't do WME that way. You could do Ka and UTA.
And WME, WME, no, I don't know.
Right,
but that's
work,
UTA
but...
who found me. And then he said, he was like, just come to LA and take meetings. And I was like, what, do I have to train? Do I have to do a course? No, just do this. I was like, eat your steak that you're giving me at this fancy.
I will eat your steak.
I will eat the steaks, you know. But like, yeah, I was doing a play at the Fountain Theater, another small
right, here in LA.
Theater mm-hmm. here in LA. And I was like, I will take advantage of that. And while I'm in rehearsal, I will go do these meetings. And then a job came from that.
Coming up after a short break, Tanya Saracho tells us about the unexpected blowback she faced while filming a Vita sizzle reel on location in LA's Boyle Heights neighborhood. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Tanya Saracho, showrunner of the new series Vita on Starz. Vita is a family story. It follows two sisters, Emma and Lynn Hernandez, who return to LA's Boyle Heights neighborhood after their mother dies. The sisters find that the East LA they grew up in is in the process of being gentrified, to a large extent by upwardly mobile Latinos. Chelsea Rendon plays Marisol, an anti-gentrification community firebrand with an active video blog. The Hernandez sisters run into her as she confronts some white hipsters Instagramming outside a local restaurant, singing the praises of its birria, or goat stew. Emma, played by Michelle Prada, tries to intervene, but Marisol is not having it.
What did you f***ing us? Keep it moving. First of all, I'm not a f***ing gringa, so you. Second, you don't tell me where I can go.
Not here. Let's go.
Did you just say to me? Why are you being such a bully? Who are you calling a bully? I'm out here defending my neighborhood, all right? Have you even considered that maybe this birria restaurant could use the business? When was the last time you went in there and bought a plate of birria?
No, you f***ing didn't with that vendida logic.
Oh, what is this? You doing Chola 101?
It's perhaps no surprise that there's a lot of salty language on a Starz show, and Vita offers swear words in English, Spanish, and Spanglish. Showrunner Tanya Saracho says Starz has given her a lot of freedom with Vita, much different from her first TV writing job on the Lifetime show Devious Maids.
With the Devious Maids job.
That I didn't understand. I didn't know who Mark Cherry was. Like, that I was.
You never watched Desperate Housewives?
No,
so you just didn't
and
connect.
I did. Well, no, I didn't know that it was a showrunner interview, that I should have, like, been in my best behavior. I was just like, all the other meetings.
Right.
Which was probably the best for
right.
the best because
sure. if
I didn't,
you relax, it's better.
I didn't know to be nervous, you know? But then that first day of work, and it was like, oh my gosh, there's no writing in TV writing. It's all pitching. It's horrible. It's
like
the
selling
worst.
Your idea.
And being witty and being who's the wittiest. And I'm
right.
not like that.
It just was a shock.
This is horrible.
Culture shock in the
outline.
Artistic sense.
Yeah, all of it. I'd never seen Final Draft in my life, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
And you didn't write your plays that way.
No. And I like you know, by the end of that job, I was like, oh, wait, TV writing is rendering content when you're hired gun, you know?
Right. Did somebody say something to you at Devious Maids?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with mm-hmm. this. Tell me that story.
It was the first hour of my first day of television. One of my coworkers, he turns to me and he's really tall and I'm a short Mexican, you know, and he like tall and looks down at me and he goes, you do know you're the diversity hire, right? And I'm like, what's that? Like an idiot. And he goes, oh, honey. I was like, what? And I called my Uta, you know, and I was like, Uta, what the hell? What is diversity hire? And he was like, oh, I didn't want to tell you so I didn't get in your head. Is it supposed to get in my head? Do I have a job here? Am I on probation? Like, what is diversity hire? It just means you don't cost the room anything. You don't cost the show anything.
Because they're not paying out of their budget.
So am I a writer?
Right.
And that's what I sort of
this
battle
is where
with.
The studio is paying to try to do something. We're not quite sure what they were trying to do yet.
You know, from the top, it's a good idea at the top, but the way it gets administered in practice, it becomes problematic because you have things like this. You right. know, I know so many Latinx TV writers that kept repeating the diversity hire position because the second year, you cost the show. In practice, it's a
so you just can you could go you for could, quite
yes,
a while.
Four times, one somebody I know. So last year, I had this position and I said, we will never refer to this position as diversity hire. This is the funded position. From now on, we talk about the funded position.
That's a good thing. So then you went from ultimately, I think, looking to How to Get Away with Murder.
Yeah.
Which seems, did you deliberately think, I want to work for a big tent network show?
No, I never think anything. Nothing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Has been thought out. Everything's like, yes, and to the universe. Looking had gotten, unfortunately,
canceled.
So after that, I was working with J.C. Lee, another writer, on Looking. I don't know how we both ended up on How to Get Away with Murder together. I never thought I was going to do network. I don't feel like
I'm a network.
Girl. Yeah, because I'm horrible at plot. If you watch my show, there's nothing ever happens. just like I'm Looking.
Yes,
nothing
like,
ever happens.
All the publicists are going, is she promoting her show or trying to kill
no,
it right now?
It's awesome. Things happen, but it's not a plot heavy, like, and then this happens.
Right.
You
it's,
know?
Not a, it's not a that narrative drive.
It's more internal, you know.
Yeah.
It's a character
like
half
hour. A whodunit or a closed procedural or any of that stuff. Yeah.
And so I ended up on the show, a learning experience that I was terrible at story and plot.
So is it just a total.
But it was. But it was so lovely because there was 9 writers and 6 of us were of color. It was Shondaland.
Right.
So you're like, oh, wait, this can be done. And that was the first time that I had all those POCs, you know?
Right.
So like, I was like, wait, I could do something like this, you know? So it was great. I mean, like, I learned so much from Murder, but I don't know how much I contributed. I love Pete and we're still friends, like the showrunner. But then I had to tell him, I was like, I have to go. I'm dead weight here, you know? And then 3 days later was my meeting with Stars. So it was like, it just happened.
The way it was meant to happen, I guess. So then when you started with Stars, you had a problem with your disc. You had to have surgery.
Oh, yeah. And they didn't realize how bad it was till I was like later, by the way, I almost died. So like, they sort of pitched it to me. And then I said, yes, look, I would do this. This is what I would do with the world, you know, sort of like
the toss back.
Look, this is what I would do with it. And it was like, great, fantastic. Okay, I'm going to Scotland tomorrow because my boyfriend lives in Scotland. I'm queer. I have
a boyfriend. People are like, what? Because people are, I'm just going to stop momentarily. Are people upset about that? Like, you are supposed to represent this.
No, I do. I have a boyfriend, but I've been with trans people, cis people, male, female. I'm fluid. So
you're fluid.
Yeah, I guess you could say I'm bisexual, but I think there's more than 2 genders. So right. I say I'm queer.
So back to your back. Back to the back.
Oh, yes. I had a microdiscectomy, but then I got spinal infection from it.
Infection,
from the hospital, you know, the operation. And that was crazy. Six months it took. And this cis male Scott quit his job and came for 6 months to take care
you.
Of me. But like, I couldn't even go to the bathroom myself, feed myself. Like, anyway, it was really hard. But then while I was recovering those 6 months, that was the 6 months of development, sort of like the big chunks where you turn in your outline and then you turn in your pilot, you know?
Yes.
It was all phone calls and emails. So I was like Frida Kahlo on a bed. Like the outline I wrote with one hand, there was a catheter from the middle of my arm to my heart for the infection. 2 months it took to get it out. But something happened there when I was lying in the bed because, you know, they give you opiates and then you don't sleep for days. Like, and then I was like, I want to be a boss. I'm going to be a boss. And I remember my ceiling just be like, I'm going to live and I'm going to be a boss. Aww. And then it happened. You know, like, I'm not saying it was good, but it did something.
It clarified something.
Yeah, because I was like, not reluctantly here, but I was like, I'm a guest here in TV. Yes, I'll work for some rooms, but really the theater is my thing. But something happened that I was like, I want to do this thing right. And then it just sort of,
your
like
spirit,
shifted my,
your spirit yeah. animal came yeah. to you.
You're like, you, Simba, will wake up from this bed. And we're, yeah, something like that.
So, okay, if I recall correctly, there was some blowback in terms of you in coming into the, you didn't even shoot in Boyle Heights.
Which we did shoot a pilot presentation, right. a 15 minute, and that's when we got the blowback. Yeah.
Yes, that was kind of your.
That was my pilot.
Your
it was
pilot.
Like, but it was like a 15 minute, 2 day shoot. You know, thing that was so informational and great. And like, I'd been on set as a writer, but not, you know, running the show. And so it was great training wheels for me. What it did do is that it didn't get a good reaction, especially online. And I was surprised.
What was the reaction?
Well, because I'm not from Boyle Heights. I'm not from the
and
east
online,
side.
You mean like people just on social media? Mm-hmm. That nobody saw what you were shooting. They just saw that
no,
you
but
were
they,
shooting.
I mean, I took pictures on set and, you know, just like we're shooting here. Also, there were trucks there on 7th, you know, and they were in the way. It's a small neighborhood, you know, like, yeah.
So your trucks were blocked in the way.
Yeah.
And people knew you were doing something that was Hollywood.
What are they doing?
Something.
And then they discovered online, what is it like? I don't know how they did, you know, sometimes the name of the production is on the side of the trucks. They, by 11 a.m., we had started at 7 a.m., they were like, protesting us, and I was not prepared for this, and I'm in a way not glad, but I'm grateful for the discussion, because the discussion is this show, you know, but because about gentrification, and I was sort of embodying that, you know.
Right, there was some name they called you,
which... oh yes, a white Tina,
a white Tina,
and a coconut
name. A coconut, mm-hmm. Brown on the outside, white yeah. side, mm-hmm. right.
I was like, you don't know my work in Chicago, all my work, you know, but then it didn't matter. It was not about like me being Latina or Mexican. It was that I'm not from this neighborhood, not or from this area, you know. And the conversation just yielded a lot of conversations on our side. So when we did get picked up, I said, we cannot spend too much time in the area because of our trucks, you know. So like we film whatever we have to just like
quick in, quick out.
To respect their opinion, because they're right. It does become this big force when Hollywood sort of arrives in these neighborhoods, you know? We checked out what neighborhood would be friendly, and we found Pico Union around Koreatown to be friendly to, like, yeah, come. So we gutted a 99-cent store and put a bar in there.
To be clear, the bar was the set of the mother's
yes.
bar, but go ahead.
Yes.
Not a real bar.
Not a real bar. And then also we engaged with the community. We had a community liaison that would bring people to our writer's room, or we would go, you know, visit non-for-profits and talk to people, talk to street vendors, stuff like that, because we wanted to be really informed and do this right.
Well, is that what White Tina is about, that they're afraid you're going to make some kind of stereotypical bad representation?
Sure,
or
yeah. It's a proximity to whiteness, which is selling out, you know?
And it's almost like you can't necessarily win that game without anything to show yet.
And even now I'm not trying to win it, you know, because we still have to take our trucks in there, you know? I'm just trying to be as respectful as I can and try and hopefully, if they see the show and be like, oh, okay, she's doing this right.
Tania Saracho is the creator of Vida on Starz. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance this week from Kat Yore. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.